Hello and welcome to The Big Fight. I think it was something like 23 years ago that I first went to report from Kashmir. And in the years since then, when I look at what's been happening in Kashmir, I have to say I'm struck by a sense of some pain. Pain, of course, of the loss of lives that you continue to see, loss of lives among innocent civilians, loss of life among security forces, injuries among civilians, injuries among the security forces, a sense of alienation, a sense that so many things could have been perhaps done differently. And that perhaps is the reason why I think I feel the most amount of pain, is because there are so many lessons that we could have learned. There are so many lessons that we should have learned, and yet we don't learn those lessons. It's not learned by people in Delhi. It's not learned by people in Srinagar. It's not even learned by the civilians in Jammu and Kashmir. I think all sides, there are lessons that perhaps need to be learned from what happens in the past, but it doesn't happen. And so you go round and round, sometimes in circles. And this week, again, has been a really painful week. The killing of a terrorist, followed by massive protests, and then a number of injuries. And you've got to ask yourself, were those protests really necessary? And were those injuries really necessary? And the death of so many civilians, was that really necessary? So over the course of the next 1 hour or so, we will take a look at what's happened in this flare-up. We'll take a look at the broader picture of Jammu and Kashmir. But I am also going to ask all of our experts out here to turn their attention a little bit to some of the lessons that perhaps we should be trying to learn. And joining us now from Pune, Dilip Patgaonkar, one of the people who was a former interlocutor. He did try and put forward some of those lessons. Not all of them actually were accepted. Sujat Bukhari, the editor of Rising Kashmir, joining us from Srinagar. Somebody else perhaps in many suggestions for what can and should have been done differently all these years. Professor Hamida Naeem is joining us, chairperson of the Kashmir Center for Social and Development Studies. Great to have you with us as well. Joining us here in the studio, Lieutenant General Raj Kadian, well-known defense analyst, Kamal Mitra Chenoy, professor of international studies at the JNU, Sambit Patra, actually the only real politician on the platform right now, and Praveen Swamy, strategic affairs editor of the Indian Express here as well. And Praveen, you'll probably, what I was saying about 23 years ago would probably resonate with you, because you and I used to often meet in Kashmir in various, slightly dodgy hotel rooms were the only ones that were open at that time. And there were so many things that we would often discuss and saying, this is what needs to be done. And it's sometimes with a sense of shock that you realize that 23 years have passed and some of the most obvious lessons haven't yet been learned.
Absolutely, Vikram. I couldn't agree more. And what's doubly tragic is that over the last decade, the excuses that could have been there for not getting those things done no longer exist. When we started reporting on Kashmir, there was a vicious, violent insurgency that was claiming thousands of lives every year. The reality today is that...
And just to add to that, Praveen, it's an important point. It's worth noting that sometimes people say we are back to the 1990s. Actually, the situation right now is not even vaguely similar to what
Absolutely
it was in the 1990s.
Not.
It's
Absolutely.
Much better now in one sense, and yet more radicalization now, and I'm going to talk about that.
It's much better. Violence levels have fallen to negligible levels compared to the 90s and even to a few years ago. Look at the chart from 2006, it's down. For all this fuss about, great numbers of Kashmiri youth joining terrorist groups, it's just not true. The numbers over the last 10 years, you've seen 40, 50 kids every year join. Most of them come back home after a short span of time. The numbers of terrorists active in the valley, according to the government's own numbers, falling every year. What we do see, though, is this large youth cohort that is completely alienated, disaffected from the government, disenfranchised by the political system, and a political system cutting across parties, both the National Conference and the PDP, that seem to be completely unable to reach out to young people and kickstart even a modicum of developmental or political engagement. And to me, that is the real tragedy.
Sujat, just wanted to get your take and your analysis of what's happening. And of course, this has been a really painful week. But if we step back and look at it from a slightly broader canvas, the point I think that Praveen was making is that, look, at one level, you can say the actual number of militants or terrorists is down sharply. The number of violent incidents is actually down very sharply, certainly from the early 1990s, but even from a few years ago. But the levels of radicalization and the levels of alienation, radicalization perhaps higher than it has ever been, and alienation still very much there.
Vikram, I think by and large, what you said in your opening remarks and also Praveen has been saying, that we have faltered in last so many years, essentially after 2008 when Mumbai derailed India-Pakistan peace process, and also the process which was on between New Delhi and Srinagar. If you recall the period from 2003 to 2008, we saw a discernible change as far as the political process is concerned, as far as the situation back in Kashmir is concerned, and the number of violent incidents went down, and infiltration also was drastically down, almost negligible. So there was a period when we saw a change in Kashmir, where people of Kashmir wholeheartedly supported a process which was actually going on between New Delhi and Islamabad, and also between New Delhi and Srinagar. People pinned hopes in that process, and out of that process you could see that there were initiatives taken of opening the road between Srinagar and Muzaffarabad, then the cross LOC trade, and so many things. But after 2008, there is complete absence of political engagement, and there's a vacuum, and to the extent that there is complete denial as far as New Delhi is concerned. I mean, notwithstanding the fact that Prime Minister Narendra Modi has repeated it so many times that he is going to follow the path of Prime Minister Atal Bihari Vajpayee, following his expressions of Jamhuriyat, Insaniyat and Kashmiriyat. But in last 2 years, we have not seen that New Delhi has even moved an inch towards that direction. Okay. But only denial that it's a law and order problem, it's a strategic problem, it's a security concern. And I think that has actually contributed a lot to the situation where you could see 200,000 people attending funeral of a militant whom New Delhi calls terrorist, and people who were all coming from all the places,
he pretty much called himself
the areas of Kashmir. And now, in the aftermath of that killing, we have unfortunately seen that nearly 40 people have lost their lives. So I think it is basically the,
right.
the absence of political engagement.
I'm just trying to interrupt you to get Sambit in on this. Sambit, it also seems sometimes when you're studying what's happening in Jammu and Kashmir, views seem to have become far more hardened on all sides. If you're looking at social media, if you're looking at certain Indian television channels, you know, which are beaming out nationally, you will get a sense that, you know, it's just all of these guys should be shot, they should be bombed, something should be done. You know, that's that one extreme view from within the valley, and equally extreme view, this is genocide that is taking place. There are innocent people who are just being shot in cold blood. Actually, many, a lot of people were injured and were also attacking police posts, which is something that has to be kept in mind. So two very entrenched views seem to be coming up, which means any sort of attempts to try and say the reality is somewhere in between is often lost.
As the Prime Minister and as the Chief Minister in Jammu and Kashmir has called for peace, I would also make a call for peace, and thereafter I would answer your question. The two points that have been brought up in the debate over here, one by Praveen, the word is alienation, and other, Mr. Modi's diplomacy has been brought by Sujat. I'll answer both of them. First, coming to alienation. I have a set of statistics in front of me, which is extremely important. It was in the print media day before yesterday. Since 1990s, these were the items which were recovered from Kashmir. Militants killed, 24,000. Sophisticated weapons seized, 45,000.
Sambit, I'm going to interrupt you because it's partly off the point. We agree with you. Terrorism is down. I'll tell you as to why
this is on the point. You'll have my point very soon. AK series assault rifles, 34,000. Sniffer rifles, 461. Grenade launchers, 5,123. Rocket launchers, 3,000. High explosive, 12,900 kgs. Grenades, 1 lakh.
Absolutely
rounds
no
of ammunition, 54 lakhs.
There was a war-like situation
being
fanned by the neighbors. There's no comparison.
And what I meant to say was, when you have these kind of stockpile, when you have this kind of ammunition, it is not because of alienation, it is because you're preparing for a war. It is not because some people are not employed that they would stock such amount of ammunition in their home. Second important question that Mr. Sujat raised about Kashmiriyat, Insaniyat and Jamhuriyat. Now tell me, if a militant was to be killed, is it not Jamhuriyat? In a democracy, are militants to be pardoned? Killed in encounter. The army tried to capture him. There was an encounter and he was killed. So is this not Jamhuriyat? Is this not Kashmiriyat?
Are you somewhat sad or disturbed by the fact that your own partner there is now asking for an inquiry? Doesn't
no,
that
My partner is not asking for inquiry.
They have?
No.
They've said we shouldn't inquire.
I heard Mehbooba Mufti, the chief minister of Jammu Kashmir.
Muzaffar Beg has said there should be.
Muzaffar Beg is not the chief minister. I go by the official
Naeem
stand
Akhtar.
Of the whoever, but the official stance, sir, is that of the chief minister, which was declared day before yesterday. She has called for peace and she has not asked for an inquiry. So naturally, I would rather, maturity calls that we rather avoid isolated stray comments and go for the comment that has been made by the chief minister and the prime minister. Why provoke?
I mean, are you trying to say that there is no alienation right now? Among
no,
the people?
I have given you statistics. If you have 54 lakh round of ammunition, alienation would not have 54 lakh round of ammunition. If I'm unemployed, and
so you're saying there is no alienation, it's just a Pakistani plot.
It is misplaced priorities.
So Vikram, I just wanted to actually make a point that we are not discussing that why Burhan Wani was killed in an encounter, because Burhan had chosen a path. Obviously, I think encounter had to take place or he had to live for more life. We are not discussing that. As you rightly pointed out, we have seen much more number of arms and ammunition in Kashmir before that. As you began by saying that you have covered Kashmir from right from 1990. I mean, this is no ammunition and arms for that matter. But question is that, can Dr. Sambit Patra answer this question, why 2 lakh people were there? They were not carrying arms.
I want to
ask. I mean, why 2 lakh people were there? Don't you think that that is alienation? And why you have to put curfew, why you have to lock down Kashmir for 6-7 days? I mean, if everything is hunky-dory, if people of Kashmir have no problems, if people of Kashmir are not alienated, if they don't have any political aspiration, then why problem? Why you have to impose curfew?
10 seconds to answer that. Well, by the logic that since there were approximately 1 lakh or 35,000 people attending the funeral of Wani, that means alienation. Mm-hmm. By the same logic, I would sell that because people from Mumbai attended the funeral of Yaqub Memon, does that mean that Muslims of Mumbai were alienated? Absolutely no. There were 50,000 people attending the funeral of Yaqub Memon as well.
Dr. Patra, there is no comparison between Bombay and
there is alienation.
This is absolutely wrong that there is no comparison between Bombay and Kashmir. Both were funerals.
No, there is
both
no
were funerals of militants and terrorists.
We are discussing an entirely different situation.
I don't think you can draw a parallel.
Look at the statement. Muslims are angry with the Supreme Court. Why should the Supreme Court should not punish Muslims? What is this statement?
Political people cannot have positions. Sorry, that is not a democratic statement.
This is not a democratic statement.
Democracy allows you to take a position on anything.
No, your statement
to the people.
Muslims were annoyed with Supreme Court because Yaqub Menon.
Let's not get diverted into Yaqub Menon.
Yaqub Menon's story is since over.
A militant is a militant is a militant.
Of course,
stories may be different.
I didn't say that he killed. Both
killed.
He is a militant.
Right.
Okay. There's no problem. But he's a competent. He was killed. But I am saying that let us try to ponder over this fact, which we have been trying to ignore for long time, that why 2 lakh people would come into the funeral of a militant. Just try to understand the. That means okay, there's
no,
a problem.
I'm
actually, hang on. More to the point. More
and
to the point.
Army said there were only 7,000 people at the funeral.
I'm not able to understand as to why ISIS should be there. I don't understand as to why there should be this Nice attack in France. I'm not able to understand. Let me tell you very frankly, when people are living happily everywhere, is there alienation in France? Is there alienation in America? No, but there are terrorism attacks there as well. So by this justification, the 2 lakh people were there and a funeral of...
Funeral of Wani
was different from funeral of Yaqub Memon is absolutely wrong.
I think actually we're all missing the point. Yes, there can be terrorism and there can be attacks in a place where there is no alienation. But to say that by and large in Jammu and Kashmir, there is only a small law and order problem in one or two pockets, otherwise, there is no alienation. The reason there's a problem with that is, and that's exactly what has often happened, we take no efforts, by and large, to try and solve other issues. Because we tell ourselves there is absolutely no problem. So we shouldn't be in denial. I'm not saying that everyone in Kashmir feels in a certain way.
One is in denial with the problem of Jammu Kashmir. 1,000 crore as a package to Jammu Kashmir. Golden Heart for the floods. We all stood by Jammu Kashmir. We should stand. They are our own brothers and sisters. That's our part, our country. So naturally, why should we be thinking that we're alienating
Dilip
Jammu
Padgaonkar,
Kashmir?
Do you think there are lots of simple things that could have been done in the last decade, some of which you also referred to when you were an interlocutor, which just haven't been done.
You know, Vikram, I first of all want to endorse what you said right in the beginning of this program, namely that many, many respects, the more things change in Kashmir, the more, alas, they remain the same. And, you know, whether it is Delhi or Srinagar or elsewhere, I think we seem to be like the Bourbons of France. We neither seem to learn anything nor forget anything about the past. Let me be specific in two respects. One, it, you know, the situation in Kashmir has always been complex in the sense that the there has been a disconnect between the state and the citizenry for a very, very long time. And I'm not going to go back into history. But the fact is that if you look back at the manner in which one responded to incidents in 2008, 9, 10, you'd notice that there is a certain pattern which seems not to have changed. You know, in the report that we submitted to the government, the very first thing we said was precisely that there are mass protests, and you should know how to handle these mass protests. So long as they don't turn violent, then you need to be extremely judicious in the way you use force. We said this on the basis of the discussions we had with top police and CRPF officers, and we concluded that, you see, they weren't either trained well enough or even equipped well enough to face such crowds.
Dilip,
things
so
did change a little bit after that.
I'm just going to take your point forward a little bit by showing everyone a series of pictures, and then Jim Kenyatta, I want to come to you. So too much force is used, lots of innocents have got killed, lots of them have got injured, and there's been a lot of talk about it, and people say that the security forces should have exercised a lot more restraint. Now, that's very easy for people to say, but I think we have to also try and fix where culpability is. Now, take a look at these pictures. This is the sort of equipment that the Jammu and Kashmir police has and the CRPF has. This is what they are using. They've got those cane shields. They've got, in some cases, some body vests that may or may not provide them a certain measure of protection. Most of them are not wearing helmets of any sort. And they're confronting people who are throwing stones at them. They're confronting people who came in to attack and try and burn down police stations. That's what they're confronting out there. And then you get surprised if they open fire. They get surprised when they fire, pellets. It's also our fault for not having taken any effort in all these years to provide them with proper equipment and proper protection. General Kadian, let me turn to you. If those same men were given the basic minimum of equipment that I think every expert has been talking about, not now, but for the last 20 years, maybe they would be less eager, less willing, less ready to open fire because they feel a little safer.
Vikram, first of all, let me give you a little historical perspective on alienation. My first visit to the valley was in 1963, when I think most of these people were not born. If I drove my jeep through a village, if the children saw me, they would run away shouting, "Kafir aa gaye." It was in their blood right from that time. That time there was no violence. There was not much interference from Pakistan's side. So alienation has not grown overnight. Yes. Maybe there have been ups and downs. Now when you talked about the security forces, it is always easier. I am not defending anybody, not equipping the police properly. Always easier to analyze an issue after the event has taken place. None of us ever pointed out, after all, what is the job of a local police?
We've been
police?
Pointing out poor equipment
Just one minute,
for 22
one minute, one
years.
Minute.
22 years. I mean, I personally done it. He's done Vikram, it for 22 years. I'm sure others have too.
I'm not defending, I said. CRPF, there is no reason why they are not better equipped. But the police, the role of the police is to intervene into local disputes, thefts, robberies, disputes between neighbors. This kind of outburst was not foreseen. That is where we are seeing the problem.
So why
today.
Was that for? Wait, hang on. Wait, just pause for a minute there. Why was it not foreseen? You've seen violent incidents taking place in Jammu and Kashmir since 1990, off and on, up and down. 2010, you had stone pelting. Okay, if not before that, 2010, a bell should have rung saying maybe they're going to be stone pelting mobs and we should have proper equipment to tackle them. It's 2016 now. Nobody could have foreseen that there may be stone pelting mobs in Jammu and Kashmir.
Should have been foreseen. I'm not saying. I'm saying it was this kind of emotional outburst that
Vikram
came out of.
May I just interrupt?
Vikram,
in 2011, no less than the Prime Minister of India, then Prime Minister of India, did foresee it. He stood in front of the Directors General of Police in this country at the annual DGP's conference and said, we will do this. Non-lethal policing is something that is really important. You'll recall the previous year, far greater casualties, 110 people killed, 117, I think. Yeah. Anyway, many hundreds of people, maybe over 1,000, badly injured. He said, we're going to do this. The CRPF was supposed to have at least 3 battalions of the RAF equipped on a priority basis with modern riot control equipment. The Jammu and Kashmir police were supposed to be properly equipped. Various states in the union were supposed to do this. It is now 2016, 5 years. I don't want to say, you know, this government, that government, but whoever it was, nothing has happened.
Okay.
What is more? It is not simply a question of equipment. The pellet guns the Jammu and Kashmir government, police are using today are far less lethal on paper than a Kalashnikov, which is their standard issue rifle. But it's not an easy weapon to use and train. The pellet scatters everywhere. It's got to be used as it is by riot control forces everywhere after a lot of regular training and discipline. Riot control forces train for weeks abroad every single year. It's not something that you just give a guy a gun and say, you know, go forth and control a mob. There is specialist ammunition which specialists in ballistics work on after lots and lots and lots of evaluation. Nothing's done over here. And frankly, for every injured person there, the then Prime Minister of India, who promised in 2011 before this country that this would be done and didn't do it, is culpable.
Sambit?
I would say, well, yes.
I mean, why can't this be done? This is something that the Prime Minister can announce tomorrow. It's how much is it going to cost to equip all the forces out there? And you know how many security forces have been injured? Because they are sitting and confronting the situation, okay, let alone the civilians who have been injured. A lot of security forces have been injured. They need not have been.
No, Vikram, Vikram, saying that our police forces, our security men should be better equipped, I think it's absolutely right. It should be. But the issue right now is whatever resources are available in the country, whatever resources have been utilized in whichever way. Well, it is something which we should be in the future.
Whatever resources are available,
what I mean to
this
say,
would cost 50 crore rupees, maybe 100 crore rupees, 500 crore rupees.
We are discussing a situation of today.
Is that too much ask for in terms of resources?
We are discussing a situation of today. Not at all. I began by saying that it would be really good to see our security men more equipped, and the Prime Minister has called for that in the sense that we have Make in India. We want to see that these homegrown products are used for Kashmir problem would be solved only when the intentions and the minds of the people across are solved. Only when Pakistan is dealt with properly, not by the uniform of the policeman.
It's not a question of the
uniform of the
policeman.
Just changing the uniform of the policeman or security. And secondly, I'll tell you.
See, I'll tell you.
I'll tell you why I'm harping on this issue.
I'm harping on it for a particular reason. Yes, we can say Pakistan needs to change its attitude, and of course Pakistan needs to change its attitude. But neither can you control Pakistan's attitude, nor can anybody in this room control Pakistan's attitude, nor can Mr. Modi control Pakistan's attitude. Actually, most of Pakistan can't control Pakistan's attitude. So let's forget about Pakistan's attitude for a minute. What we can do is, this is in our control. And you can say that we will have the following security forces properly equipped, properly trained to deal with
angry
mobs on the
street. One has to understand the basic.
This is what we can do. We can do it in 6 months.
One has to understand the underlying principle of the security men acting. And General Kadian would correct me if I'm wrong. As far as the standard operating procedure is concerned, the underlying principle is maximum restraint, minimum force. You have to be maximally restrained and you have to use minimal force, which I'm sure our army men are doing. Despite that, a pellet, as far as the pellet injuries are concerned, well, how we wish no one should be injured. But since there is a calamity of a huge nature, naturally some people have been injured. In fact, it is the state government, it is the central government, which are rushing the help. The eye surgeons have been rushed there.
Okay.
To see to
I'm
it that people
to,
are dealt with.
Coming with the Chinnaw, you have to say something, then I want to come to Professor Naim, who hasn't yet spoken.
Listen, pellet guns are easily solved. If you have 12 bore or 20 bore weapons with long barrels and appropriate cartridges which don't spread, you won't get this 110 plus blind and partially blind. And this is not something that people don't know. You just have to get onto the net and you'll get any number of examples. And that is what the Western police use. And as far as even in Jharkhand, Chhattisgarh, Nagaland, Manipur, our forces there have been, especially the police and paramilitary, have been better armed and better trained than in Kashmir.
Okay.
One last thing about alienation. Please look at one instance of alienation, one figure. How many educated people in Kashmir, doctors, dentists, engineers, are unemployed? Where are the industries, small, medium, large, to provide them employment? You have to look at the socioeconomic pattern, because unless they're getting employment, unless they are able to look after their families, they will be alienated.
Hamida Naeem, let me come to you. At the end of the day, you know, when you see the number of injuries that have taken place, now there are two ways of looking at it. Yes, as we were just saying, the security forces should be better trained, should be better equipped, and of course should be acting with a lot of restraint. Flip side of that is that in many cases, they were actually facing mobs that were attacking police stations, burning them down. We saw one particular police officer being drowned when his car was rolled into the jhelum.
I wish we could come out of this power discourse, because it is all the time dominating us so much that we lose actually sight of the real issue. This time, your forces actually achieved new depths of degradation and new refinements of horror in dealing with the people.
She does not say why. She doesn't say she's an Indian. She has to say our forces. This is alienation of the forces.
She will ask her to say Bharat Mata ki jai also.
No, this is not Bharat Mata ki jai issue,
please,
sir.
Please.
I mean, you have all accepted it. So coolly you all have accepted. If someone from Kashmir says your prime minister, your country and your forces, we smile back and say, oh, well, that is the way they behave.
This is where you have thrown us by your own actions. We can never say we are part of you because of
why
the
can't
total
you say, ma'am? I objected to it, rightly so. This is not our. This is not your forces. General Kadyan is our general.
Don't force
He's
me
not
to say
your.
What you want to say. What you
okay,
want
can
me to
I,
say.
Okay, Hamida Naeem.
Your actions which have brought us to the.
This
total
is what I object to, and
India
we listen to it so coolly.
You can continue to objecting, but Kashmiris will continue to say that there is total disconnect between India because of your actions, because of the sins you have committed. Since 47 in Kashmir.
Hamida Naeem, can I just ask you?
Since we have committed.
Hamida Naeem.
Why doesn't he allow me to speak? Why are you keeping this discourse power dominated?
Okay, Hamida Naeem.
If you have kept this discussion here, you should also listen to the powerless people, to the people who have been all the time oppressed, to the people who have always been suppressed, to the people who have always been given a raw deal. You should listen to their voice. Why are you calming me down this time?
But
I say India and Kashmir, it is because of the disconnect you have created over the years. It is not me responsible for this. We would have loved to have wonderful relations with you if you have dealt with us in an honest and democratic way, which we have not done.
Hamida,
you have never tried to own us. You have never tried to own us.
Okay.
You have always looked upon us with suspicion. You have never trusted us.
Okay,
you
Hamida,
are deliberately throwing us in the lap of Pakistan. And every time you are trying to escape your responsibility by escaping all the ills in Pakistan, you are insulting our intelligence, our dignity, our conscience by saying that your demand for freedom is actually your willingness to be used by Pakistan. This is the nonsense we have to listen to every time.
Okay, Hamida Naeem, can I just ask you one question? You said when you are
looking at... What has happened in Kashmir is intolerable to thought and odious to the soul. Your forces have kicked themselves loose of the earth. Kick the very earth to pieces. And now here
can
is
I,
a discussion on...
Can I ask, Hamida Naeem, if I can interrupt you, if I can interrupt you in full flow...
Gun should be stopped. And nothing has happened so far.
Okay, Hamida Naeem, in this case, unlike 2010, where there was a martial fake encounter, then after that, a young, innocent schoolboy walking on the roads was shot, and that sparked off waves of stone pelting. In this particular case, the protest followed the killing of a man who was a self-confessed militant, if not a self-confessed terrorist. I'm trying to avoid setting you off again. And secondly, a lot of the people who were injured, it's not that they were necessarily sitting at their home and somebody came in and shot them. A lot of those people were attacking police posts and trying to set them on fire. Please note, most of those members of the Jammu and Kashmir police are Kashmiris.
Now let me answer.
Yes.
Now let me answer. whatever kind of government, there is always an implicit social contract between a government and people. And government takes upon itself the responsibility of protecting their lives and giving them safety and security. And when people are angry, they are angry for the various policies of the government. And then you have to deal with this anger in the human way, not by taking their life away. Even if they pail the stones, the goalie is not the answer
of
the
stone. No, I get your social contract.
What are you saying?
Hamida Naeem, I get your social contract answer, but you haven't answered me my question. What happens to the social contract? Here is a police person, and you've got a mob of people coming to try and burn down his police post and presumably kill him inside it. What are you going to tell the person that it's a social contract
last
and you should allow it to happen?
Last time I gave the example when
quietly allow yourself to be burned like happened
India,
to the person who threw
like
him to the jail.
Like recently in Haryana, you do not use excessive force.
The 30 people Billions
are killed
in Haryana also.
Billions of property were destroyed by the
Haryana.
But few
people
were killed.
I want to answer this. You had an emotional outburst right now, which I do not accept when you address our Prime Minister. Just a second, ma'am. Ma'am, we heard you. Ma'am, you cannot shout on a television channel alienating our country, saying that your country, your forces, your people. Just a second. Let me show you the... Madam, please. Madam, didn't we hear you? Madam, didn't we hear you? Madam, didn't we hear you? Didn't we hear you? It is not the first time that I have attended
no,
a debate.
Madam,
can she be quiet for a while? Can she be quiet for a while?
It's not. Power should always listen to the powerless, but you don't let us speak.
You have spoken for the maximum. You have spoken for the maximum span of time. You have shouted at all of us. You have called us our forces in your country, and you say that we have not allowed you to speak. You should see as to what Pakistan does to in Baluchistan. And you are saying that your country suffocating
is telling us
just a second. No, no, Vikram, allow me. Allow me to complete. Just a second. Why this? She has been saying the country has been suffocating. And every debate she shouts against the country. She speaks against the Prime Minister. Okay. She speaks against the army. And then she maintains the country suffocating. Is this suffocation? Is this the way country suffocating? And secondly, I want to answer to what.
Can I just come back to the.
I want to answer to what Mr. Kamal Mitra Chana. I'm coming at the topic, in fact. He said that there is alienation because there are no industries, which at prima facie appears to be true. Where are the industries? So I think the Abdullahs have to answer this. The Abdullahs have ruled for the most amount of time over the valley. And it was Mr. Omar Abdullah who first tweeted disaffected people, alienated people. I wanted to ask Mr. Abdullah, you should ask your father, your grandfather, and yourself. The three generations ruled over Jammu Kashmir for all these decades, and yet you call disaffection. Why not a single factory?
I'm not convinced that anyone with factories. Dilip Patgaonkar.
Professor Naeem, ask this to the Abdullahs. Don't shout at us.
Dilip Patgaonkar.
Your own Abdullahs.
You ask him. He has been now not a loyal slave of yours. He has been, he has dared to speak the
Professor
truth.
Naeem,
you should
please
take him to the court.
Professor Naeem, we've heard you. Can I just get somebody else? Dilip Patgaonkar, familiar rhetoric, familiar dialogue. Now Pakistan's getting into it. There'll be more. Pakistan is making ridiculous comments. There'll be lots of Pakistan, and they justifiably are going to be pilloried on all channels. It's all almost predictable. Is there anything that you can see that perhaps might point to some sort of a change going forward? Or is this pretty much the pattern we should just reconcile ourselves to?
I think we truly need to learn lessons from the past. You know, in 2011, panchayat elections took place in Jammu and Kashmir. And more than 35,000 representatives were elected. The voter turnout was absolutely impressive. People became candidates in the face of intimidation and even murder of candidates. What happened afterwards? You had this extraordinary grassroots involvement in people's problems. But then that the powers that were required to be given to the panches and the sarpanches were not given. Because the 73rd Amendment of the Constitution of India, which empowers them, were not at that time extended to Jammu and Kashmir. I think we lost a major, major opportunity to extend the involvement of people in the democratic process. As a result, what has happened is that we have to wait for incidents like these to talk about what's going wrong in Kashmir, whereas it is the interregnum between the incidents that need to be addressed. And in that interregnum, it is important, of course, to make sure that militancy is rooted out root and branch. It is important to stress on development. It is important to get people involved in the democratic process. But at the same time, and here I look to the future, at the same time, it is imperative that one reaches out between the institutions of the state and the citizenry, a number of possibilities exist. Why, for example, have elected representatives across party lines in Jammu and Kashmir not gone out in, obviously, dangerous to their security? I can understand. But why have they not done it all these years? Why right. is it that civil society groups have not been much more involved in the dialogue? Why is it that the business community has not been involved? What I was saying is, I have to say that in the course of the 1 year that we spent traveling in each one of the 22 districts of Jammu and Kashmir, the number of people who came out to talk to us, the kind of suggestions they gave, all of these have been listed. And excepting for the Horiyat, who for reasons of their own did not talk to us, the rest did talk to us. And I think what is important is to understand their complexities. The stone pelters in 2010, many of them, barely weeks later, were standing in the queue to join the police force. Now, both these things are Kashmir. Right. So I think you need far better sustained communications between those who hold office and the citizenry at large.
What Mr. Patgaonkar said is extremely important, that you set up grassroots institutions, but you don't empower them. The whole problem, the root of the problem, is people feel disempowered.
Right. And General Kadian, one of the other issues is that you can't treat this as a pure law and order or an army situation. And you must
No, it is not a simple law and order situation. A small point which the professor had mentioned, that the police forces should be equipped with 12-bore rifles so that they cause less damage. What kind of weapons you carry depends on two factors. Number one, what is going to be your task? Number two, what is the adversary carrying? If he is carrying AK-47, you give the soldier a 12-bore, he will be demotivated.
No, and it does happen that sometimes there's a crowd of stone pelters, and them are militants who will then come out and fire, and that's a dangerous new thing that is happening.
As of now, nobody has a magic solution. If there was one, we would have applied it a long time ago. But what can be done now by senior functionaries of the government, whether they be politician or somebody else, should arouse a hope that we are working towards a solution.
Okay, so start finding... let me just turn to the audience very quickly.
I am Kashmiri, born in Kashmir, educated in Kashmir. I have done my PhD from Delhi. I am working here now. But I feel no change. The Kangri throwers, the fire pots, who throw the fire pots on the police and people, have turned into stone throwers now with modern weapons and better avenues. They are paid for it. The Kangri throwers were not paid. They were sentimentally fingered up, come on, throw it, when we were young. But the same thing, they have to address the problem at the basic grassroots. Why are they available for this type of work? Unemployment, and the government is doing nothing. Private sector no industry in Kashmir. There's no industry.
Can I come to all of you now for your final thoughts? You know, and just to ask each of you if, you know, we've had a really painful week with a number of...
Vikram, make a point before you go for the final thoughts.
Yeah.
Vikram, I just wanted to go back what Mr. Patgaonkar said, and also there was a mention, as you yourself mentioned, about Pakistan. I mean, I think it has always been the case that you are throwing an opportunity on a platter to Pakistan to do something in Kashmir. I mean, look at the history of betrayals that have been with Kashmir. I mean, look at Mr. Patgaonkar's report in 2010. The same Home Ministry which had appointed the interlocutors for Kashmir ultimately disowned that report. I mean, and that has been the case with all the initiatives and all the efforts that have been made for the last 60, 70 years. Number one. Number two, it is not the case of purely employment which is being actually talked about every other day now. I mentioned it in another debate also, that from 1996 to 2002, Farooq Abdullah's government provided 1.5 lakh jobs to the people. There have been so many, these economic packages of 24,000 crores, 80,000 crores, all these crores. Mm-hmm. Has that changed the situation on the ground? I think that's very important. I mean, while we say that employment could be one of the factors of the problem, it could be one of the factors of the problem.
But it's certainly not the major factor, but it's simply in Kashmir, by and large, is very prosperous, especially when you compare it to other states, which are more violent.
It is everywhere. But the larger problem here is the political alienation and political disconnect. I think that is to be that you
Fine.
Have to
So can I come to all problem. Of you? Immediate question to ask everyone. The spiral of violence that we are seeing, which we certainly hope is going to die down now, and next week is again going to be a very critical week to watch that. We hope that it doesn't happen. What would you do immediately right now?
I think it's very clear that years of trying to fix this problem through some kind of deal with Pakistan haven't flown and are not going to fly. What we need to do is to reach out to this youth cohort in Kashmir, which ever since 2006 has been becoming increasingly restive, agitated, angry, and drawn to internet Islam, to what we call radicalization. And this can be done through a whole bunch of policy measures. A lot of the money Delhi has spent has gone into the pockets of a fairly thin contractor elite. And genuine employment creation hasn't really happened.
If you go to
the C. Rangarajan Committee report, which was appointed by Prime Minister Vajpayee, and look at its recommendations and look at what's actually done, there's a startling disconnect between those two things. And if I may just add a last point, it isn't just about jobs, Shujat is right. It's about having a little hope. Go to Old City Sopor or Baramulla or Srinagar. These are cesspits, pits of absolute hopelessness, drugs and despair. You have a generation which is wasting away and is being drawn to this kind of violent nihilism. This needs reaching out by political institutions. The insurgency is over. It's degraded. It's finished. Okay. Violence is at the lowest ebb in 20 years.
Use the occasion to reach out.
Two quick advices. First, rightly pointed out by the Chief Minister, Mehbooba Mufti, look at the separatists. Most of their biological children are not in their in our country. They are in America, they are in UK, they are in Australia, and they are doing fantastically well. And they are harping on the children, the so-called children of Jammu and Kashmir, for cannon fodder. I remember the tweet of Asia Andrabi the day Vani was killed, and she tweeted, "My child, I've lost my child." And then someone tweeted back, "Your biological child is in London. And Vani is your child." So this game that the separatists are playing with the so-called children of Jammu and Kashmir has to be understood by the stone pelters. And second quick point is, if alienation, political alienation, was the cause of throwing stones, then Kashmiri pandits would be throwing mountains.
There must be a strengthening of these grassroots organizations, panchayats, and so forth. They must be empowered, and there must be a monthly report to the assembly of what is actually going on. Otherwise, right, the money will go somewhere else.
I think my own reading, I've been there as a civilian a couple of times in the last few years, is that people are looking for jobs. Even taxi drivers, young people I spoke to, they asked me if I could find a job for them in Delhi.
That's why they are.
Therefore, the first thing we need to do is encourage private entrepreneurs to go and set up industry.
We must remember
that Kashmiris have not hit anything that benefits them. Tourism has carried on despite the insurgency. They haven't hit a single tourist, nor will they hit the industry. That's my reading. And once you start that, it's a vicious cycle. I know we say there should be normalcy, then we can develop. But development should start first. I think the peace will come later.
All right. Hamida Naim.
Burhan Wani provided the rallying point, the trigger to the pent-up anger of the people. And the anger of the people is for the stalemate to which we have been condemned to live. The political uncertainty, the non-resolution of the political issue, and therefore, and the highest militarized zone to which we have been condemned to live in. The first thing should be demilitarize the entire civilian space and let the present government roll back all those anti-people and anti-land policies which they have actually started working on. That pent up immediate anger of the people is against all those policies which the present government is pursuing against Kashmiris.
All right, Shujat.
And then also this pellet gun should be buried 5 fathoms deep tomorrow morning.
Yeah, I have to make 3 points. One is that shun this approach of treating each and every Kashmiri as a terrorist. Number one.
No,
number
Vani
two,
is not each and every,
there is no.
This is a dangerous statement.
There is.
So, Jat, no, you are a respected panelist. No, not at all.
Samvet, you just.
Yes. No one just, the government does not treat each and every Kashmiri as no one. We do not
debates.
Do that.
You listen to the
Vani,
debates on
Vani
major
was
channels
a militant. Why should, we provide an alibi for Vani?
So, Jat, I will agree with you.
That's what I am saying. No, I am saying that don't treat 2 lakh people who attended.
No one is saying that they're terrorists.
Treat it as something which is very horrifying.
But Sujat, can I
mention in Kashmir?
Sorry, Sujat, I just want to come in on this point. I think what you've said is, one thing. I just want to say one thing. You have to recognize that Yes, I understand that there is a certain amount of jingoism in certain media circles, which are coming out. And yes, certain television channels take a certain
position.
Now in most
of the media circles.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that that's what the whole of India is saying.
You are also under pressure.
No. I'm saying that whosoever is adopting that approach, let him or her shun that approach. That's my appeal. Number one.
Okay.
Number two, there is no option but to have dialogue with Pakistan on Kashmir and dialogue with people in Srinagar. Lack of engagement is actually leading to this kind of situation, but these two tracks are supplementary and complementary to each other. And third important point which I want to make is that you will have to punish the people who are responsible for using excessive force. You did not do that in 2010 in spite of having an inquiry commission. You buried that commission without punishing anybody. Punish people, overhaul administration, and tell people that we have punished people who have used excessive force and who faulted as far as controlling the situation in Kashmir is concerned.
Of course, it's not that nobody has ever been punished. People were convicted for the Machil, for whatever happened in Machil. People were, punished after that. In Budgam, what happened, the army punished people. So it is starting to happen that people do get punished. Of course, your broader point, though,
I think the state government also has to do, I think they also to do something rather than we always tell Delhi to do something.
All right, yeah, and that those cases of the army which did step in and punish the people who were responsible. All right, Delhi Patgaonkar, final thoughts are with you. If you had to give suggestions on as to what can be done on Sunday morning, what would your suggestion be?
The Home Minister has reached out to the leader of the Congress Party and to Omar Abdullah. I think the time has come for the Prime Minister now to reach out to all stakeholders, political stakeholders, both in the state of Jammu and Kashmir and in Delhi. Create a group of representatives who will very quickly go through a huge number of extremely valid recommendations made in various reports over the past 7-8 years, see what needs to be updated, and then reach out, engage with all other sectors in civil and society, including the separatists. And yes, despite what we hear now from the other side in Pakistan, I think it's important to make sure that your internal matters are on a very even keel before you make the next move. I think Mr. Modi, who is a pragmatist, who wants this country to be economically strong, knows what the stakes are in Jammu and Kashmir, but I expect him to take the lead and get this kind of consensus, which I think is entirely possible.
All right, Dilip, well, that's lots of excellent suggestions, and I think particularly one of the last points that you made, that yes, of course, Pakistan is going to try and fish in troubled waters, and we should expect nothing else from them. But whatever we can do internally and whatever are the essential internal steps for us to take, that is the very first thing that we should start addressing. And there are lots and lots of immediate, easy things that can be done, which I certainly hope the government is going to start taking a look at doing right away. You've been watching The Big Fight. We'll be back again next week.